Welcome to Knowledge Cast. This is a look into the world of knowledge management, information management, data management, and everything in between. This is brought to you by Enterprise Knowledge. I'm Zach Wall, founder and CEO of EK, and today we're speaking with Barry Byrne, head of global knowledge management strategy at Novartis. Barry, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Zach, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. I followed your career. You're a big name in the field, really anxious and interested to hear what you have to say. If you've listened before, you know that I always like to lead off by asking our guests to define knowledge management. It's one of those funny things. I've been in the industry for 25 years, and I still am surprised by some of the definitions I get. So would you share how you explain what you do and what your definition of KM is for our listeners, please?
Sure. At Novartis, we focus in on the value that knowledge can bring. And we describe knowledge management as a focus on getting the right knowledge to the right people at the right time so they can make the right decisions. And we keep it as simple and as clean as that, Zach.
Fantastic. And that's great. And I also like the fact that you led off with the word value there. Now, when you say right knowledge to the right people at the right time, can you go a little bit deeper into that? When somebody asks you for that second sentence, what does that really mean? Do you stray more towards the tacit knowledge, knowledge transfer, knowledge capture side of KM, more towards the findability and discoverability, more towards the connectivity of knowledge? Tell me more.
So I guess at my level, as global head of knowledge management strategy, one of the big things that I'm trying to do is to join the dots. Yeah, so trying to connect the approaches across our organization, our company. So you can imagine a company of over 100,000 people, a truly global company like Novartis, focused medicines company. We will, of course, like any very large company, have parts of the organization that are taking different approaches and could be collaborating better, could be sharing knowledge better, could be leveraging lessons learned better. So my big focus is on trying to create a holistic strategy for how we approach knowledge management across the whole organization, but also, you know, on that second layer beyond, you know, as you said, explaining right knowledge to the right people at the right time. The big thrust, of course, is just creating that knowledge sharing culture across all of those areas and those divisions that I mentioned, so that people understand the value of knowledge sharing amongst such a big organization. But then also, as you said, appreciating the different types of knowledge that exist out there, be it tacit or explicit. And of course, the repositories, the countless repositories that are out there. So also, there's a myriad of tech platforms now that every organization has, which in some cases create challenges in sharing knowledge and information. So we do recognize, as we go deeper down, as you described, that there are elements and different areas of focus across our organization, some in kind of, you know, service desk type ticket resolution improvement, you know, customer facing or internal customer facing, but also, you know, in research and development, in marketing, there's multiple different areas. Quality control, for example, in medicine is hugely important. There are multiple different areas where we see the value and the importance of knowledge sharing. So we try to create a strategy and an approach and leadership and governance, of course, for that whole framework so that it all can work together well.
You know, Barry, you make a really important point there. There are a million different places in an organization like Novartis where knowledge, information, data can live. And many of them are there for a real reason, right? I mean, marketing has very different knowledge management needs and information management needs than an R&D department would or than a help desk would. So you've been there about 2 years. What was your approach to getting your arms around all of that? I mean, I imagine that it was just a massive challenge simply understanding who was doing what their needs were. Can you share with our guests a little bit of how you get to understand what was happening there?
Sure, yeah. Great point. And it has been about 2 years, and it's been a wonderful journey. And I would say the biggest step and the biggest help towards getting your arms around it and your head around it was just being very open. You know, I mean, we talk about working out loud a lot in the knowledge management discipline. So being very open and very collaborative in the approach to seeking the way forward and to collaboratively craft the strategy for the organization and not do it with your head in the sand. So the very first thing I did was was a huge shout out to say, I'm here. I'm not coming with all the answers. My role is to try and connect the dots and connect a lot of you wonderful people who all have great approaches in different parts. And there are some huge strengths in terms of knowledge sharing, culture. The big thing I did was to create a community. And that was very simple. What does that look like in a kind of a COVID environment, a very decentralized pandemic world 2 years ago? It was very much leveraging the tools and technologies. I'm very visual, so I love to have everyone stick what they know as an organization on virtual collaboration space and then have a regular monthly meeting, which grew and grew and grew to a community. Now we have a thriving community of about 180 people across the organization who meet regularly and really do collaboratively help shape our roadmap as we move forward. And that's been really rewarding. I've learned so much from that. And I can genuinely say through that, we have cut so many possible roadblocks out of our journey, and we have saved so much time and so many efficiencies. And of course, we talk about communities of practice so in knowledge management. So approaching it through that way has been hugely empowering for me and got us to a very mature state of knowledge of the organization and what everyone is doing at a very short time frame.
Yeah, very good. So you mentioned these 180 folks. So tell us more about them. Did these folks raise their hand and sort of self-select themselves as interested? Did you tap them? Was it a mix of approaches to find your KMers there?
Yeah, it was really a grassroots movement like a lot of communities would be. Yeah, and you've got to accept as you're growing a community that there's a lot of work from the champion side in the early days until you build up that critical mass to kind of create a place where people want to be. Using a tool like Miro can make it very visual and very rich. And then people who have missed earlier sessions can jump in and gain knowledge by visually kind of navigating records, images, stickies, you name it, video recordings of what's happened previously. So there's this great collaborative pooling of knowledge that way. But the way we access people was largely, as you said, Zach, was to do a shout out, to use our internal platforms and our internal tools to shout out and say, hi, I'm here. I've come from the Irish military. I don't have all the answers. And that might have helped, to be honest, Zach. Having a different background, of course, and not being strictly too much just a tech guy or someone who's already within the pharma industry, but a different background, perhaps, maybe was interesting as well to some of our first joiners to come and see the approach. And I suppose that's how I got into knowledge management, how I got passionate about knowledge management, what it can bring in the military sense and lessons learned and after action reviews. So in the early days, probably, you know, trying to be humble, trying to be collaborative, work out loud, shout out and say, look, I'm here. Don't have the answers, but I would love to get us together. You know, being Irish as well, you know, if it had been the real world, I definitely would have offered to buy people a Guinness after a meeting if I pulled them together.
Excellent.
That kind of a collaborative approach where you pull people together as a community and then try and share knowledge about what you're trying to approach. So again, quite literally would call the meetings sharing knowledge about sharing knowledge. And that created so many shortcuts to us to understand collaboratively as a group what is happening in our organization, who we should talk to, what has been done before, what can be leveraged. And it was a wonderful, wonderful powering springboard, I would say.
Excellent. Now, you also just called out COVID took away one of the most critical change management tools, which is offering to buy somebody a Guinness if they'll talk to you about KM. So, Barry, I'm curious about the role at Novartis, Head of Global Knowledge Management Strategy. That's quite a title. That's cool. Are you the first Head of Global Knowledge Management Strategy at Novartis? Is this a new role or did you have a predecessor?
Yeah, I was. Yeah. So it's a new role. Yeah. Okay. It's a new role. It exists within the learning function. And so I report to the Chief Learning Officer, which is a great place for it to sit. I was in the military prior to this, and our knowledge management function sat largely within the technology end of the military, which you see sometimes in some big companies as well.
Yep.
You also see it within the HR function. In fact, APQC have released an interesting survey, just came out this month, which I was just reading, which have some interesting findings on where KM functions typically sit and how they're populated. I sit within the learning function. It's a new role. So from that perspective, I was very much, you know, starting with the greenfield type scenario possibly, and was really throwing it open to the floor and saying, I have a lot to learn here about pharma, what we're doing, what's happening. But the more I got to meet the community, the more I realized that, you know, a lot of these wonderful folks hadn't met each other. They didn't know what the other was doing in terms of an approach. Some of them did, but there were huge, huge, big aha moments between some of the people on the call or you know, oh, wow, I could leverage what you've done. Or you're also using this tool. Let's talk about that. So that was really great.
I think you described yourself as one of your roles as a professional dot connector. So there you go. I mean, especially in an organization of 100,000 people spread globally, I'm sure one of the things that you found is that there are these wonderful KM activities that are perhaps happening. And your role now is perhaps to elevate them to the enterprise level or identify where else they can be leveraged. How have you gone about doing that? How have you gone about not just identifying those things, but determining what deserves a closer look or a more enterprise view?
Once we got everyone together, we established over a period of time a collective understanding of what was happening around the organization. We also understood that there were different levels of maturity of knowledge management within different pockets of the organization. We then set out to benchmark ourselves globally as an organization using an enterprise hat on, an enterprise view. And to do that, we picked a couple of people to input into that. And then, of course, we played back the findings and our scores on that to the community to double check that we felt we were correct in giving a correct representation. And we benchmarked ourselves basically as an organization from the enterprise view, not using any one division or any one area, so that we could then share that level of maturity and understanding as a global view, but internally primarily to senior leadership to say, look, this is where we are, but also amongst our community to gain a mutual awareness, situational awareness, you would have called it in the military, amongst our community to say, look, this is where we're at globally. There are pockets of excellence. There are pockets of areas where we struggle and where we don't have a designated knowledge manager in some areas. So across it, here's where we sit as an enterprise. And if we all agree with this and this score and where we've landed, let's see how we can work collaboratively then to move up and mature as an organization. We're on a 3-year transformation journey with a big focus, a big push, and absolutely blessed to have very senior sponsorship of knowledge management and great vision from our very senior leadership to say that this is a top business priority. So it's very exciting.
Well, indeed. And that's actually why I was curious about the role. The mere fact that Novartis chose to create such a senior position for knowledge management, I think really shows the prominence within the organization, the fact that leadership supports it. That's exciting to hear. That's wonderful. I also love the fact that it's in the learning organization. We get asked this question a lot, and I'm seeing that placement for KM is perhaps the most successful these days. There's such a clear mission and alignment with learning and performance. It's great to see. Now, you mentioned the benchmark. So did you define your own benchmark? Have you used one of the external published benchmarks? When you say benchmark, what does that mean?
Yeah, so we used an external benchmark and a capability assessment tool and one of the most widely used and recognized ones. And from that gave us that kind of external worldview as well, which was, it landed well within the organization to be able to say, okay, this is where we sit. And then you can see what publicly available information there is on other organizations, both by industry or slice it down into different segments as well.
It really helps when you're able to put math against it, when you're able to say, we're behind the market here, we're ahead of the market here, especially from an executive decision-making perspective. I think that's probably a really important tool. It sounds like you wielded it well. Let's go back a little bit. You mentioned several times the idea of explaining the value of knowledge management and how important that was, especially in your early days. How do you approach that? And what does value of KM mean at Novartis? So many different strings to pull on. Productivity, use and reuse of information, collaboration, innovation. What words do you use to talk about the value of KM?
Great question. And of course, knowledge, particularly tacit knowledge, is notoriously difficult to pin down and put a number on. You can focus on things like time saved and efficiencies created, but they are always open to and subject to challenge in a boardroom as well. So, and some of it is very individual in terms of its interpretation of you feel, and it depends on people's worldview. So where we focus, where I focus, is on, again, leveraging my past experience. A lot of the messaging I use, is, which is something I truly believe in, is that sharing knowledge can save lives. We focus in on that. I speak about how it would be inconceivable for a sports team to come off the pitch and have a negative result against them, lose a match, lose a game, and not talk about where they had lessons learned, how they could improve their game. In a military setting, it's inconceivable that you would come back from a battlefield situation abroad and have loss of life and not talk about it and extract lessons learned. So why do businesses not put more emphasis on this? So I talk about that. I talk about how it was so integral to the world I came from. After action reviews and lessons learned were woven into the culture. In my last role, where I led that for the Irish Defence Forces, there was a focus on leveraging that knowledge sharing, after action review. I would say combining it with technologies, search optimization, repositories, and then finally leveraging, you know, the power of communities, digital communities, and trying to create collaborative spaces for our missions around the world. So when talking about it in Novartis, I talk about how incredibly powerful it can be. You know, I say we are in the business of saving lives. Medicine, getting the right medicine to the right people at the right time means getting the right knowledge to the right people at the right time so they can make the right decisions. And if we do that, we can save lives.
Very well said. And I love how you're pulling on your background, frankly, in a very different space in order to convey that message. Let's talk about your background a little bit. You just scrolling down your LinkedIn page, NATO, United Nations, you're a professor. You've done some incredibly cool things, both squarely within KM and somewhat tangential. Can you share with our listeners how you got to where you are?
Like many people, you just find yourself in a position, in a sweet spot sometimes where it just comes together. And for me, I had an interest, I would say, in my undergraduate degree in knowledge management. So then when I was in the military, in the technology end, I got an opportunity to do a master's degree through the military and chose to study how knowledge management could be enhanced and improved within the Irish military. So that was a great stepping stone. A few things lined up at that time in terms of the technology we're using and a new course that was being developed in NATO, which was the Information and Knowledge Managers course. A really interesting point about this, and this is something that I really leverage as well in our messaging, is that came about post 9/11, the absolute tragedy that was the lack of information and knowledge sharing within the services, within the security services, which are well documented to perhaps have contributed to that challenge. So there was both restrictions in platforms, technology platforms not being able to communicate seamlessly, but also a knowledge sharing culture between different services and different divisions that didn't have a culture of saying, we've got these people on this list, there's this unusual activity happening here. So NATO shifted their approach. And what they did was they adopted this ethos, which was very clearly outlined, and it was responsibility to share, balanced with need to know. And it was flipping the whole traditional military approach of need to know on its head and saying that you primarily, first and foremost, have a responsibility to share. That was hugely powerful. And it came at a time when I was getting involved in the field. I was lucky to be on the first NATO course on that in Virginia in the US and helped develop the curriculum for that. And then was also studying as part of my first master's that area. So it was a great timing for me, and I ended up being then on the NATO subject matter expert board, which met quarterly in NATO headquarters in Brussels around the topic of knowledge management, which was great exposure for about 6 years to see emerging trends and emerging approaches. But the key takeaway is that it's responsibility to share, balanced with need to know. And that's very powerful. And I still use that messaging and that, you know, you talk about how do you sell it. I still use that terminology and tell that story internally within Novartis. And I think it's very powerful. People can connect with that. It resonates. They see that if knowledge sharing doesn't happen, it can have serious consequences.
It's such a clean and simple message. And it really is just turning the thinking on its side. I think so many organizations, they almost teach their people to ask the question, should I share this? Who needs to see this? And what you're talking about is effectively shifting it to say, I should put this out there, and asking the opposite question, why wouldn't I share this? Why wouldn't I put this out there? And I think that that shift makes it so much easier to reward and encourage people for putting their knowledge really where it belongs, which is for others to consume. You've invoked your military experience several times, and I wanted to ask the question specifically, though you've already answered a little bit, I'd love to hear more. What did you take away from that? What have you carried into Novartis and your other experiences that allow you to be more effective within the KM field?
I suppose the big learning I had was that knowledge management needs leadership. It doesn't happen on its own. And I learned that from my exposure again to the military environment, again, to studying what NATO do. You know, I was lucky enough to visit the Joint Analysis and Lessons Learned Center for NATO, which is in Lisbon in Portugal. And there's this whole division of NATO focused on lessons learned because they realize that this stuff doesn't happen by itself. Someone needs to be responsible for doing it. You need to be, because sometimes they can be sensitive, challenging things to look at when things don't go well, you know, when there's loss of life involved. So people need to be in charge of doing it, then have to have professionalism in how it's done. And then these lessons need to have a professional approach as to how they can be assessed, verified that they are truly lessons learned. You know, I mean, one of the things I learned on that course was that, you know, it's a lesson. People speak about a lesson learned, but it's not a lesson learned. It's a lesson identified. It needs to go through a whole process to verify that it is actually a lesson learned. And once it's unwoven, and again, to your point, Zach, a great strength of sitting in the learning organization is that it's not a lesson learned until it's into the doctrine, into the training, into the processes and standards of an organization that you can truly say that that lesson has been learned. So leadership is a big takeaway for me, both because of seeing how strongly it's addressed within an organization like NATO. And then also I was lucky enough to do another master's thesis studying the knowledge management program, which we had delivered to see what were its strengths and where it had been successful and where it could have fallen down and where it was starting to fall down. And a big part of that, it emerged that, you know, leadership was hugely important there. And I would say our program possibly sometimes can be victims of their own success. If they're very successful and things are going well, people associate the knowledge management program with the platform, with the technology that is being used. And they forget that you need continued strong leadership and new teams rolling in to keep it going, to keep the processes going. Of course, knowledge management is about people, process, and technology. You can't have it solely rely on one pillar or become associated in people's minds with one pillar and think, oh, it's this platform that we use. We go there to share knowledge. It's the leadership of it, I would say, to link all of those together is hugely important. So that's where I put our focus. It's been my main focus, I would say, is creating leadership around the approach to knowledge management. And of course, the fourth pillar that gets added to the people, process, technology approach is, of course, governance, which is added quite frequently. And we are really focusing that on that as well, to create an organization structure and a governance structure to make sure that this does happen.
Excellent. You make such a critical point here, too. I think a lot of times people think of leadership when the transformation is happening. We're going to hire a head of KM. We're going to get the budget for this. We're going to roll out the new solution, the new processes. But it's the consistency. It's that sustained leadership that really makes KM work over the long haul. I really like your points there. Let's talk a little bit about what's different. I mean, I think a lot of people talk about military. They talk about command and control. I don't want to overly simplify this, but they say, well, it's easier. You do what you're told. And so if you're told to collect lessons learned, if you're told to share your knowledge, then you do. Obviously, you're now in an organization that has a very different org structure, a very different approach to leadership. Is it easier? Is it harder? Is it different? Talk about the shift, the mindset.
I always said, I mean, I got challenged with this once or twice as well when I spoke at conferences. Things people would say, oh, you're in the military. The reason you have such a successful program is because you can just order people to do that. But of course, that couldn't be further from the truth. You can tell people to try and embrace this, but actually militaries traditionally, I would say, are, you know, they're less tech embracing, you know, about in terms of your demographic as well. You don't have in a military, you don't have all of your workforce sitting in front of computers and technology platforms. There's huge percentage of your workforce, probably completely flipped from in terms of normal organizations, in terms of the demographic of who is using a computer on a day-to-day basis and portals and platforms. So to get people to embrace that, to get people to embrace the culture of knowledge sharing on technology platforms, particularly, you know, in this Web 2.0 kind of time when we were doing it, and enterprise social and hashtagging and trying to spread knowledge with online communities and share and telling people to share knowledge first. You can't order people to do that. It's something that you really need to, again, to use a military term, win the hearts and minds. And you have to do that. It sounds corny, but if you don't do that, you can't order people to do that. So I would say, Zach, there's more similarities than there are differences. And in fact, I said that before I took the role as well. I said, you know, I'm not in any way concerned about this because I think there are more similarities. And if you can convince people in a military environment to share knowledge and win some hearts and minds and change the culture, then you can do it in a pharmaceutical organization and where it's highly regulated, where there's medicines, where it's life and death sometimes. I think the shared gained experience from both worlds really transfers well. And I'm loving the journey.
Excellent. You can't order people to share knowledge. That's my favorite quote so far. Well said. Now, Novartis, obviously, research and development is a massive component of the organization. And in my experience, that can be a double-edged sword that can lead to a lot of collaboration and innovation, a lot of understanding of the value of getting different opinions in the room. So in a way, a predilection towards KM, but it can also lead to some competition. I've been in R&D organizations where there's two labs next to each other and they're actually competing with each other.
Absolutely.
Have you encountered that at Novartis? How have you overcome it?
I work with NIBR, our research and development organization, and they would speak about that. And they, you know, when we talk about potential challenges that we can encounter, one thing that does come up is, of course, to your point, Zach, a lot of these people, they're PhDs, they come from an academic background where the whole ethos is to hold on to your knowledge, get published, right? And have the first discovery or the first paper. So you have got to kind of untrain that type of approach and build this collaborative approach that we are all in the one team. I would say that NIBR and are one part of our organization, which are excelling at that type of collegiate knowledge sharing culture. There is a journey there for all parts of the organization to try and overcome those aspects. Again, you could say that about anything, though. I mean, in sales and marketing, for example, you could say that as well, that salespeople would be notoriously naturally competitive and would try and, you know, outperform each other. So it's a whole culture change. And what you've got to do is, you know, and we're very lucky in Novartis, we have a huge culture thrust. We have a chief culture officer, which is great. So linking into all of those are key enablers. And it all comes back to trying to sell that message and make it very simple. Again, as you said earlier, not trying to pin it down too much. I mean, numbers matter, metrics matter, but to bring it back to its simpler, basic concept that sharing knowledge can save lives, that really resonates with people.
Wonderful. I'm wondering, and of course you just said it's not all about the numbers, but now I'm going to ask about the numbers. You mentioned this three-year transformation. What was the process to get your executive team saying yes to that? Did you have to do a business case? Was there some ROI calculation to it? Or was the group already sold and understanding the value?
I would say that we were hugely lucky. And one of the big enablers to that was what I spoke about earlier, the community. So that it comes back to first principles. It comes back to do what you're supposed to do within knowledge management. We talk about communities of practice. We talk about working out loud. One of the biggest enablers I had was by working out loud, by saying, look, I don't have all the answers here. We're looking for a sponsor. We're looking for senior leadership. And one person who was on our call happened to know that there was a very senior member of our executive committee in Novartis who was quite passionate about this area that they had worked with. And we got this incredible connection to very senior leadership who were passionate and who got it straight away. And what I say is, ROI metrics, we have a big focus on that at present. We're weaving that into some of the technologies that we're using to underpin what we're doing to build that into the AI that's within our technologies to make sure we can track things like shares, reuse. But fundamentally, I think we were quite lucky in that. And perhaps, as you said, that the organization had recognized that there was a need for it. They'd created my role. They were already on that journey. But the power of the network meant that we got this connection And that was a big, powerful moment for us. Not to say that we're not measuring metrics. We are hugely focused on it. But I would say the bigger empowering element was, in fact, the community.
And that connection to that really invested executive, is that someone on the business side, somebody who's saying, this will solve a business problem or these business problems for me? Because I always look for that. Yeah, that's great. So what are you most excited about at this point? Knowledge management as a field is getting bigger and technology is quickly moving along and helping some of the things that folks like you and I have dreamed about for years actually come to fruition. What gets you out of bed in the morning? What are you most excited about in the field?
What I'm most excited about within Novartis currently is not the technology. It's more creating the structure, connecting the people, seeing the potential of that, and creating an organization, an ecosystem of people, process, and technology, which can really help an organization that's going to literally impact people's lives. And to that end, I would say that one of the other messaging points I always use is that if you think about it, going back to the NATO example, organizations that really focus well and score well on these capability assessment, these benchmarks, and recognize that it's important to them are organizations that realize they take big risks with lives, with money, or that they know, they recognize themselves that they are purely a knowledge-based organization. So what are those types of organizations? The organizations like NATO, big militaries, they are organizations like NASA, which take lives with money. They have huge, huge KM programs and leadership, chief knowledge officers, and then knowledge-based organizations, the big consultancies, the Accentures and the Deloittes of this world. They know that their main product is knowledge, so they have huge, huge teams and huge spend. So I also use that messaging internally in Novartis to say, we are an organization that's been years developing medicines. You know, sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't. There's huge elements of knowledge accumulated there that we need to be able to constantly reuse. We are an organization where lives are involved, and we're an organization where we are a knowledge-based organization, so we need to focus here. So, sorry, I've probably digressed there a little bit, but that's one of the points.
Novartis checks all three boxes. You have lives on the line. Obviously, you're dealing with massive sums of money, long-term investments for payoff, and then serving as a knowledge-based organization. So you've checked all three boxes, which explains why it is such a priority at the moment as it is. I don't know how much you can get into this, but can you talk a little bit about the three-year transformation? What's on it? What are the big milestones? What will change as a result?
Sure. So yeah, it comes back to a little bit to your question earlier in terms of what excites me. So of course, building the ecosystem, the people, process, technology, governance ecosystem, connecting the technologies that are out there, mapping the technologies that we have across the organization and creating clarity for our associates, 100,000 plus people, just that action alone can create huge efficiencies. And to say, let's use this platform a bit more, let's use this one a bit less, let's clarify that you should use this platform for this type of knowledge exchange. So there's that piece. There's also some hugely exciting technologies emerging on the market and some that we're currently leveraging as well. And of course, this is all centers on AI. That's a cornerstone of our transformation journey as well. And that's a big pillar of our KM transformation, is to streamline and optimize our use of technologies also around AI. So to your point earlier, when you were asking about excitement, if you think about the evolution of knowledge management, in the early days, all the excitement was around repositories and the buzz was all about repositories. How do you create taxonomies and ontologies to best leverage a repository over here? And how do you get people to go to it? And if you build it, will they come or will they not come? Then the evolution came, I would say, towards communities and networks of people. And how do you collaborate online? How do you form these communities online? So communities of practice and platforms like SharePoint and others, where you had both a repository and a kind of a chat function. Now we're in the world, of course, of AI, and that truly brings the next level of potential to knowledge management. I think it is currently being and will be transformational. And there's a multitude of technologies in this space that have the ability to connect people to documents and they know who knows about what, and that kind of network analysis that happens. And that's why we're seeing a huge elevation in the focus on knowledge management.
That's right.
One is of course, the pandemic means that we're all more distributed than before. There's increased levels of frustration as people are at home and they don't have that collaborative access to their peers and the knowledge and say, how do you get this? Or they don't have the water cooler effects pumping in and saying, you know, how do you navigate this little challenging work? But there's also the increased focus and exciting element of knowledge management, which is AI is suddenly making big data and huge repositories of knowledge now hugely accessible and much more intuitive to interact with. So you can get dynamic in the flow suggestions for who could help you with this or, you know, what document could support you with this. So that excites me. And that's a big part of our roadmap as well and something that we're looking at. But it, essentially, if you narrow it down, and this is giving no secrets away, it's really our pillars are culture change. It's creating a culture of knowledge sharing within our organization. It's linking it back to the fact that we can literally save people's lives if we have this work out loud, share first type of mentality, balanced with a need to know, then that's hugely powerful. Then process and technology are something where we can add huge efficiencies.
Yeah.
Clarifying what platforms we should be using while also helping the organization to navigate new emerging technologies that are out there, leveraging AI. And then the final pillar being governance, where you have roles and responsibilities, and not just responsibility, but accountability for knowledge management taking place is hugely powerful and hugely important. And again, that comes back to the leadership, which I spoke about earlier.
Excellent. You know, the AI piece is pretty wild for somebody that's been in the field for decades to think that KM would now be at the center of so many organizations as the foundational element to enabling AI within the organizations. It's a very exciting time for folks like you and I, and it sounds like Novartis is taking the right path. You mentioned the governance, the roles and responsibilities. Can you speak more about your team? Do you have full-time knowledge management professionals reporting to you? Or at this point, you mentioned the community of 180. Is that who's quote-unquote kind of driving the KM transformation?
Yeah, so we're at that point now where we're focusing on creating that org structure. Novartis is going through a big transformation at present in terms of the whole organization, which is very exciting, a big transformation called Transforming for Growth. So as part of that, we're seeking to ensure really great knowledge transfer and flow within the organization, but also looking at opportunities for how we can leverage that to create a really strong, robust governance and leadership structure for Novartis, which you'll see us into the next decade. So I would say that at present, I do have a small team of people, of professionals, and we do have a team of professional knowledge managers solely focused on knowledge management. Probably comparatively small, I would say, but we are leveraging the power of that community to great effect, you know, and all those people want is clarity and guidance and cohesion. And for one part of your organization, not to be developing an approach to something that is siloed off from another part of the organization who are doing the same thing. You know, if you're doing lessons learned, let's make sure we all do it the same way across the organization. Yeah. If we're putting things in a place that we're going to point some really great AI at, let's put it in a place in a certain way with some simple steps to make that AI as a little job a little bit easier.
Fantastic. So let's offer our listeners a little bit of guidance here. I mean, Barry, you've done some really impressive things with your career. What would you say to someone who wants to be you, who wants to be in a position like you're in, say, a decade from now?
Well, what I always say is that depending on what area of knowledge management you want to focus on, and that's the wonderful thing about knowledge management as well. Going back to the point we mentioned earlier, it's a great time to be getting into knowledge management because, of course, AI empowering it, kickstarting it, making it sexy again. It's a really exciting time also because it reduces the frustration, which, you know, ESG and this huge shift towards digital employee experience and everything is hugely important to companies. And we see movements in that area with Microsoft Viva and others really getting to focus in on, you know, how the well-being of your workforce, the frustrations that they find, how do you deliver knowledge to them in the flow easier? It's never been a better time, I would say, to get into knowledge management. It's got the spotlight is shining on it in terms of value it can bring to an enterprise. There's also areas of knowledge management that you can get into that you can specialize in. So, for example, if you're heavily technical, you can get into the search optimization, the platforms, the repositories, the how you can optimize AI, how you can build taxonomies and weave multiple different systems together to interact with each other and create those linkages and APIs between systems. So the technology end of it is exciting. There's also the procedures, the how-to of knowledge management, I would say. But there's the leadership. If you're looking to target one of the CKO, the chief knowledge officer type roles, or to lead a knowledge management initiative, you've got to probably realize that you need to be a little bit of a salesperson because this stuff doesn't happen on its own and it's not intrinsically linked or hugely visible to either money saving or money delivery. So as we spoke about before, particularly tacit knowledge is notoriously difficult to pin down to prove a value of. And what you need to do is be able to craft meaningful stories that make sense to people, which can sell the value of what you're trying to achieve. You can, of course, focus on the library type disciplines where a lot of knowledge management evolved from, of, you know, taxonomies, ontologies, the access, the categorization of information, the retrieval of information. That's not necessarily connected to the technology end. The technology end can be separate from that again. And the technology end, as we spoke about, can be quite sexy at the moment with AI and all the new developments that are happening in that space. And then you can be part of the more people side of knowledge management in terms of empowering communities, creating communities. But to try and lead a program, I would say you need to have an understanding of all of those areas to be able to combine the best of all of them. But also, as we mentioned, to be a bit of a salesperson, to be able to weave and craft a story which makes a compelling argument for doing knowledge management. Because, of course, people are busy. People don't have time to go and share knowledge after the fact. They need to understand the value of it, or it needs to be woven into the culture of an organization. So I would say if you aspire to lead it, you've got to have a little bit of all of those, but largely be able to and have a passion for communicating the story, the value, and not be afraid to sell your discipline.
And I think, Barry, you've demonstrated that beautifully over the time that we've talked. You've told these stories from your own background and others that paint a really clear picture of the value of KM, the importance of it. And your ability to convey how you've, in a way, listened more than you talked, I think is also a really powerful trait of the successful CKO. So well done. Let's end with this. What's that one must do that any organization, any CKO or future CKO must do in order to be successful with the KM transformation?
Oh, for me, it's gain senior leadership sponsorship, very, very senior as you can go, to gain a voice and agency within your organization, to give you that vehicle to elevate the mission, the story, business case for knowledge management up to the highest level. If you don't have that, then you're trying to do this grassroots movement, which can be perceived as varying different values and can perhaps not have a joined up approach across an organization. So I would say it comes back to what I mentioned earlier, leadership, 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 leadership. Make sure that you have leadership of your program and make sure you have leadership, sponsorship and buy-in at the very top. I mean, that's the very first thing you should focus on if you're trying to build your case and start out on your journey. It goes without saying that you need, you know, a framework of how you're going to do it and a clear roadmap. But without senior leadership, sponsorship and buy-in, you're never going to have that voice and that access. And it's not about money necessarily. It's about having a voice within the enterprise to say this matters.
Well said. You know what I find remarkable about what you've done at Novartis, though, is that you've done both. You have done the grassroots on top of getting the senior leadership and the business buy-in. So being able to do those both, to join them up, as you say, I think is a real mark of the success you're going to have there. So again, congratulations and well done.
I hope so. But thank you very much. Very kind. And thank you. Really enjoyed this.
Absolutely. Barry Byrne, Head of Global Knowledge Management Strategy at Novartis. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your leadership in the field and really, really appreciate all your words.
Thanks so much, Zach.
Thank you for listening to this episode of KnowledgeCast. Again, I'd like to thank Barry Byrne of Novartis, and thanks to everyone for joining us. To check out more information on KM, visit us at enterprise-knowledge.com, and have a great day.